The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this September 25th, 2024. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you for the next 2 hours right here on ESPN 106.7. Lots to get to on the show today. It is a busy Wednesday edition of On the Line. There is a ton of football to talk about, a ton of news to talk about, some controversy to talk about as well. And also great guests on the Wednesday edition of the show. The weather has been terrible, man. And we knew it was going to be, right? This isn't a secret to anybody. But, yeah, seems to be rolling in here today. Tomorrow's supposed to be bad. Friday has a chance to be bad. So just stay safe out there. Be sure that you are taking care of yourself, protecting yourself as best as you can. And as always, do not use me as your weatherman. I mentioned a bunch of guests today, and Wednesdays are always a lot of fun. We have Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He'll be joining us here on the show coming up in about 30 minutes as we preview what is probably the biggest game of the year so far in college football. It's Alabama and Georgia, the Crimson Tide hosting the Dogs inside of Bryant-Denny Stadium coming up on Saturday night. So we will have Jordan joining us in about 30 minutes to talk about the Georgia side of things, get his thoughts on Alabama, and ultimately what's going to happen in this game coming up on Saturday night. So we'll talk to Jordan Hill about that coming up in just a little bit. And then in hour number two, it's Wednesday, which means it's Double D Wednesday. Daryl Dapperidge from Locked On Auburn will be joining us as well for 30 minutes. We'll get his thoughts from Auburn, Arkansas, flip the page to Auburn, Oklahoma, because you know how Wednesdays roll around here. We focus and flip the page to next week. So that's what we're going to be doing a lot of today. Outside of those two guests, though, you can be a part of the show in a couple of ways. You can give me a call, 334-321-1390. That number, again, to the phone line is 334-321-1390. Or you can shoot me a text in the on-the-line text box. That number is 334-784-1067. You can be a part of the show outside of our guest. Would love to hear from you. It's you and me in the studio today. You can tell that my voice is coming back a little bit. It's still not at 100%. It's not exactly where it needs to be, but we're getting there. Don't worry. We're getting there. So I appreciate your support and sticking with me through what's been an up and down week of a voice. But the story that's caught all the headlines today, and I'm sure a lot of you have seen it. If you have not, allow me to enlighten you. And I'm going to be completely upfront here on this. I have seen so many different stories, so many different, quote, reports, and so many different perspectives and insights and inputs on this. I'm still learning. Okay, I'm still learning on exactly what happened here. Because there have been a lot of, quote, reports. There's a lot of, quote, reporters out there nowadays. And no, I'm not about to go on a huge rant, as much as I would love to. I'm not going on a huge rant about how the media world has declined and it's at the lowest point it has possibly ever been. Not doing that today. I could, but I won't. But the problem is, there are so many conflicting reports, especially early on in big stories like this, where you just don't know what to believe. And unfortunately, when big news breaks, you have to almost hold off your reaction until you get more information. And that's something I've had to learn and teach myself how to do, especially being in this business. Because it's so easy to read a story like this and just immediately react. And sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you just do what feels natural. Or sometimes you're on the air or you're writing a story or on social media, whatever, and you just got to react to what you know. But the problem is, as time goes on, with every single story that's ever existed, more information comes out. Another source comes forward. More information is learned. There's something else. Another tile is uncovered. And so, with this particular story, out of the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, right, UNLV, Matthew Sluka, the quarterback there at UNLV, he is a 3-0 starter this year at UNLV. He was a really, really good player for them. It was announced this morning. He posted something on social media. It caught wind on all of the sites, right? All the news outlets, that he was stepping away from the program. He was not going to be a part of the UNLV football team anymore. And so initially you're thinking, huh, it's kind of weird. This guy's playing pretty well. His team's undefeated. Got some decent wins. Like, kind of a little, seems a little fishy, but that's okay. You know, maybe there's probably more to this story. Well, then it comes out, and people start interpreting it as, okay, UNLV's 3-0 with wins over Houston and Kansas. They're going into their bye week, and it turns out, at that time, he's claiming, the quarterback, is claiming that he is leaving the football team because he had committed to things that would be provided to him that were not guaranteed, that were not delivered, if you will. And yes, we all know what he's talking about. He's talking about NIL. He was claiming, and don't worry, there's more to this. And again, I'm probably going to miss something, so just bear with me here. Do your own research. I always preach that. Do your own research. This is a reaction show, not a reporting show. So he's claiming that he committed to UNLV with a certain dollar amount of NIL money, and they did not give it to him. Reading through his social media post and what has come out early on, he was claiming UNLV promised me X amount of dollars, and they did not give it to me. Therefore, I'm stepping away from the program. I'm going to redshirt, and I'm going to leave. Okay. Makes sense. So naturally, for the first hour or so of this story, everybody jumped on UNLV. Oh, how dare you? That's college football. They're nasty. They're dirty. Players done wrong. Yeah, you should absolutely leave. How would you feel if you went to work and they told you they were going to pay you $1,000 a week and they only paid you $500? You'd quit too, right? That was the initial reaction. And at the time, with the information we had, it's a legitimate reaction. Good for you. Good for you, quarterback from UNLV. Good for you, Matthew. But then, more information came out. More information came out about this UNLV quarterback, 6'3", 215 pounds. 3-year starter at the FCS level, by the way, at Holy Cross. He was a pretty good player. Has his team 3-0 this season. Says he was leaving because he had an agreement with UNLV to have a certain amount of money and they didn't pay it to him. But then it comes out that this agreement that he had with UNLV was not with the actual program. It was with the offensive coordinator, or a coach on the staff, is how we learned at the time, of what seemed to be $100,000. Had a verbal agreement of $100,000 to go and play for UNLV. We also learned in this, and again, this has all happened this morning. We also learned with more reporting that after the win over Kansas, Mr. Quarterback at UNLV and his parents and an agent that they signed rather quickly, may I add, went and demanded more money from UNLV. He left because they didn't give him what they wanted. And I'll say this, ESPN's Pete Thamel and Adam Rittenberg, who are two very well-known journalists, have put out a story on this. I highly recommend you go and find it. I'm going to read you some of this. At the start, it says, UNLV quarterback Matthew Sluka has left the undefeated Rebels on Tuesday night over claims of unfulfilled verbal NIL promises from a UNLV assistant coach, a decision that illuminates the fragility of the current collegiate system and how talent is procured and retained. Sluka's agent, this is where it gets juicy now, Marcus Cromartie, I hope I pronounced that properly, told ESPN, so they interviewed this dude's agent, the quarterback's agent, they interviewed him. He says that UNLV didn't come through on a verbal offer of $100,000 from an assistant coach. Okay, we move on. The quarterback's father, Bob, told ESPN that head coach Barry Odom, remember that name, don't you? Later said in a phone conversation that the offer wasn't valid because it didn't come from him, but rather from the offensive coordinator, who declined comment to ESPN. UNLV and the collective, they didn't respond. UNLV's collective did pay one $3,000 fee for an engagement he made this summer, according to a report. And basically, the collective at UNLV says they've never heard of this offer. So the head coach denies an offer of $100,000, and the collective denies an offer of $100,000. And here's this quarterback that's bawling out that was under the impression that he had $100,000 coming his way, didn't get it. There are reports that he also walked into the office and demanded more money, and they said, yeah, we don't know what you're talking about. They said, we don't know what you're talking about. Does this story sound messy? It's because it is. It very, very much is. And I probably didn't do a great job of explaining that, but here's the bottom line. You've got conflicting stories, you have conflicting sides, and miscommunication. I also read somewhere where this so-called agent isn't even registered in the state of Nevada. So he's worthless. That's a crime, by the way, just so people understand that. You can't do that. You can't represent somebody and not be legally licensed to do so. So it just gets murkier as we go. And it's easy to react to each individual part of all of these stories. You start at the beginning where you have a player who claims he was promised a certain amount of money. We would think this was in contract form. This was written down with signatures, right? So at that time, you're thinking, man, he got screwed. You hate to see that. That's dirty. Lawyer up, buddy, and good luck to you. That's the initial feeling. Then we move on, and you hear, oh, this was a verbal agreement. This was a verbal agreement between player and assistant coach. Head coach has no idea, supposedly. NIL collective has no idea, supposedly. And now you're thinking, man, why in the world was this not written down? Why was this not put in a contract? Why was this not guaranteed to this young man? And it also has come out to where whatever written agreement they did have of $3,000 a month or whatever, they were willing to pay that and nothing more. He asked for more. They said no. And so he left. A 3-0 UNLV team with two wins over Power 4 schools. And he said, peace out. Wild stuff here, man. It's catching the college football storm, or the college football world by storm. Again, I encourage you to go and read all the different parts of this. All the different parts of this story, because there's a lot to take in. And as I mentioned in admitting, I'm still learning. Here is the graphic that Matthew Sluka posted, the quarterback from UNLV, and then we'll take a break. Says, quote, I have decided to utilize my redshirt year and will not be playing in any additional games this season. I committed to UNLV based on certain representations that were made to me, which were not upheld after I enrolled. Despite discussions, it became clear that these commitments would not be fulfilled in the future. I wish my teammates the best of luck this season and hope for the continued success of the program. Which backs up everything I just told you. That timeline follows perfectly. I committed to UNLV based on a certain representations that were made to me. $100,000, says the offensive coordinator, which were not upheld after I enrolled. Head coach denies it. Collective denies it. Despite discussions, aka the demands, it became clear that these commitments will not be fulfilled to me in the future. So he leaves. There you go. That's it. That's the story. And it's wild, man. Absolutely wild. More of my reactions when we come back. Your reactions as well. I got phone calls, got texts. This story is going crazy. Got more on this coming up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Back inside the studio here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line regarding this entire UNLV conversation. Got a text during the break. We're about to get to the phone lines as well. Says verbal agreements mean zilch in any state in the USA. It's all a shell game. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it verbal agreements don't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything. More now than ever before, right? I mean, who has honor and respect anymore? And when you're talking about hundreds of thousands of dollars between universities, NIL collectives, and high school athletes, like, come on, man. We got to be smarter than that. Let's get to the phone lines here for the first time today. 334-321-1390. Bob down at Pike Road. What's going on, my man?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Of course.
Well, I have to disagree with you on the verbal agreement thing. I've been practicing law in Alabama for almost 20 years, and verbal agreements are enforceable if they're relied on to the detriment of one of the parties. And so when the coach, who it would be debatable whether it was reasonable to rely on that coach, but if he's out there offering scholarships and other things to players to get them to come, I don't know why it would be unreasonable to rely on him on the NIL agreement. Mm-hmm. And then the player relies on that promise to his detriment, then the school and the coach would then be negated from being able to argue in a court of law that they're in a written agreement. Because he offered it, and the guy relied on it to his detriment and acted on the contract, and then you don't pay him. I'm telling you, in all 50 states, not just Alabama, in all 50 states, that would be enforceable in law. And you also have another component. You talked about the agent practicing outside of an area where he's licensed. It's also a crime to steal services. And while I don't know if you'd have an aggressive DA do, you know, pursue that, offering somebody something to come do work for you and playing football, it would be considered work. And then you're not paying them, and then you have the intent to do that from the start. That arguably that could be considered theft of services. So if you put this in, especially if you have some text messages and other things that would tend to support the player's contention. He's going to win that. That's going to be a slam dunk in a court of law.
Well, and all of that is really fascinating, Bob, because you mentioned, what if there is a text message or something like that that can be dug up and found? Because if it exists, they'll find it. And in terms of the verbal stuff, I mean, I get where you're going. I'm just curious, and it's cool that you are practicing law so you can help us on this a little bit. It fascinates me to think, because you've got a head coach, right, in Barry Odom who's denying it, and the NIL collective who's denying it. Right. And so my question becomes, okay, well, who's gonna win out and have the better lawyer? The young quarterback who's going after the college football program, or the college football program trying to defend themselves?
every case has a multitude of issues that are different. So the question would be to the trier of fact would be, was there an offer made? Can you prove that? And then was it reasonable for the player to rely on that offer? And, you know, if it's a coach who's going around making offers for scholarships and other things, I don't know how it wouldn't be reasonable to do that, but the player would have a duty to prove that there was some offer, and doing his word versus their word probably isn't going to work.
Right.
He's going to have to show some kind of evidence, whether it be text message, some kind of social media post, something that would show that there was a contract. Anyway, hey, thanks for letting me call in.
Yeah, appreciate the call, man. Appreciate your input on that as well. 334-321-1390. And you said it right there before you got off the phone. If there is no physical proof that this offensive coordinator at UNLV guaranteed X amount of dollars, I know the number that's thrown out there is $100,000, but just for sake of conversation, we'll just keep it at X amount of money since we don't actually technically know, I guess. If there's no physical proof, text, email, napkin, I don't care. If there's no physical proof, I'm not a lawyer. I don't practice law, but I've seen enough movies and TV shows, right? And that's what Bob was alluding to. Your word versus my word, he said versus she said, just doesn't carry all that far in a court of law. And so we still, and here's what's unique about this. I guess not unique, but I guess here's what's the fact about this case is we still don't truly know who's in the right and who's in the wrong. And this may be a situation where everybody sits on a different side of the fence here, right? It's, at this point, you may be in agreement with the university or the NIL collective, because what if they truly didn't know that this agreement existed? What if Barry Odom, the head coach, which raises a lot more questions, I understand, but what if the head coach truly didn't know that his offensive coordinator's out there offering $100,000 to kids to come play football? Now, if you don't know that, that's an issue. I get that. But stick with me here. What if he really didn't know? What if the NIL collective didn't know? You've got this offensive coordinator on the football team that's going out and saying, oh yeah, my collective's got you. Come on in. We've got the money. They'll pay you. I'll take care of it. He's probably not the only one. There's a swimming and dive coach out there doing it. There's a track and field coach out there doing it, a softball hitting coach out there doing it. You see what I'm saying here? So what if they truly didn't know? Then you'd kind of feel bad for UNLV. You'd be like, well, yeah, we're not paying that. We didn't know that was part of the deal. But what on the flip side is, what if they did know? What if they did know? And then at the end of the day, they realized at some point along the way, oh, that was a verbal agreement. Let's see how long it takes him to figure it out. And when he does, we'll just play dummy. We'll just play stupid. We'll offer him a little bit of money. No way he's going to leave after he's already been here. I'm not saying that's what they did. Just trying to play devil's advocate here. You see what I'm saying? I still don't think we have enough information on this to make a true assessment and to give true feelings about it. So I am going to limit what I say and how I feel because I still don't know. But what I do know is this, and we're about to get to Jordan Hill after the break. What I do know is welcome to the new world of college football. Welcome to the show. This is not the first time, and it won't be the last. This is going to happen time and time again. And if what we know so far is true, and all this was a verbal commitment, I hope people learn. I hope high school kids learn. I hope their parents learn. I hope their guardians learn. Don't believe these colleges, man. And I'm not a against the system type of guy. But I think we can all agree that when in doubt, they'll try to squirm their way out. Get it in writing. Why leave that up to chance? Even if you are best buds with the coordinator, even if you are best friends with the head coach, it's like a prenup, man. Nobody's going to blame you if you do it. You're just looking out for you. And you got to do that. But this is the new world of college athletics. It's going to get ugly. You wanted to get paid. Here you are. Welcome to the real world, my man. More thoughts on this as we go along today, but we'll take a sidestep and talk to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He joins us coming up next. We'll talk Bama and Georgia, the biggest game so far this year. Full preview coming up next.
On the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz, and joining us on the phone lines, he does every Wednesday at this time, it's Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. He covers the Georgia Bulldogs every single day for the 24/7 sports side. Jordan, are you guys getting weather like we are here in Auburn over there in Athens?
Not too bad so far. We've had a little bit of rain and a little bit of thunder, but on the whole, it's not been too bad. I don't know if it's going to pick up as the day goes on, but so far, so good.
Well, I mean, the game this weekend, and we're going to get into it in just a few minutes, it is in Tuscaloosa. I'll be honest, I haven't looked at the weather in Tuscaloosa this weekend. Has there been any concerns on what that could look like come Saturday night with the weather and everything?
Last I have looked, the weather should be clear by the time this game gets going. I think the biggest curveball, at least for Georgia, is just making sure that travel on Friday is safe and making sure everything's good to go on that. But as far as the game's concerned, unless some of the forecasts have changed in the last, I guess, 12 hours or so, I think we should be clear for the game.
Well, good deal. Well, we're going to talk about this game coming up in just a little bit. Of course, Alabama hosting Georgia, one of the biggest matchups of the entire season. But as I have been diagnosing it, it is the biggest game so far up to this point in the season. But there's not a game to talk about from a week ago, Jordan, but I am curious on what Kirby Smart had to say, what the boys were up to during the bye week as they get ready to play Alabama.
I think it was a big week of self-reflection really across the board, trying to clean things up, trying to shore things up, understanding what's awaiting them in Tuscaloosa on Saturday night. And, you know, for the defense, I think it was little things, a little bit cleaner tackling, but we're still talking about a defense who through three games has not given up a touchdown. And I think they're going to be hard pressed to do that on Saturday night, but that shows you what they've done to this point in the season. Then on the other side, offense is just, as Trevor Etienne told us last week, about improving the execution. There's been missed opportunities. They've really struggled, particularly in the first half of games. They've had 16 first-half drives through three games. They've only scored touchdowns on three of those drives. They want to change that. They want to get a little bit crisper blocking-wise. I know especially the receivers really focused on some of those perimeter blocks and stepping up there. So a lot to clean up, and especially with a matchup with Alabama coming up, that was a pretty well-timed bye week, not only to clean some things up, but to try to get a few guys healthy before a big-time game in Bryant-Denny.
Well, that was where I was heading next, is the overall health of this Georgia team. Did you guys learn anything this past week in terms of guys that are getting healthy, or hopefully nobody got injured during the bye week?
Yeah, to date, it's not really all that different from coming out of the Kentucky week. Michael Williams, I would imagine, is going to be questionable when this first availability report comes out on Wednesday night. Still dealing with an ankle injury. I think that it's going to be a situation I expect he'll travel to Tuscaloosa. I think he will play, but I'm not convinced he's going to play a huge ton. They'll probably pick their spots with him. Another defensive lineman, Warren Brinson's coming back well. I think that he will play and be able to play a little bit more than Michael. Jordan Hall, not convinced he's going to be able to play, but he has been making strides. And then we reported this on Wednesday morning. Receiver London Humphreys, I don't expect him to be able to play on Saturday. He's dealing with mono, trying to get back there. And, not a significant loss. He's not a starter, but he's a guy that scored a touchdown against Clemson, played well, kind of rotating in when Dylan Bell was dealing with cramps. So Definitely worth knowing that London probably won't be able to go, and definitely going to need some other receivers to step up when we get to Saturday.
What's unique about this year's Alabama-Georgia matchup, of course, it's one we don't get all the time, and it's not one we've seen every year for quite some time, but we will see it more often in this newer-look SEC. But what's unique about this one in particular is the fact that not just Georgia had a bye week this past week, but Alabama did too. And for these two teams, I mean, it's a huge showdown. Number two, Georgia. Number four, Alabama. And not that they needed any help, but they both got an extra week to prepare, get healthy, and just hype up this massive game in Tuscaloosa.
Definitely, and Kirby talked about that on Tuesday, was asked, you know, how big was having this bye week. He was asked specifically about Carson Beck and Mike Bobo, and he quickly pointed out Alabama had a bye week too, so it kind of negated any kind of advantage that he felt like those guys might have. But no, I mean, I do like this from the standpoint of, you know, these are going to be two of the best teams in the SEC. They've got a week off. They've had an additional week to try to get healthy and turn their attention to this game. And really interested just seeing how this plays out. I mean, you mentioned them playing this game. This is the first time they've met in the regular season since 2020. You know, most of the time these games are either the SEC title game in Atlanta or a national championship game. So really neat to see this in the regular season. And it comes at a good point, I really think, for both teams in that, you know, with a 12-team playoff, either team can take a loss, but this is going to be a great measuring stick on where you are among the best teams in the SEC. You know, there's several teams that I think are going to be vying for a playoff spot from the SEC. You know, obviously not everyone can get them, but whoever wins this game, that's going to be a huge boost. And while the other team's not going to be excited to have lost, they'll get a better sense of where they stack up and if they are going to have a legit shot to go make a playoff run later in the year.
Yeah, I mean, you have some people who are saying that it's win or you're out type of game, and I just don't believe that. Like you said, with the expanded playoff, I mean, if this ends up being your only loss, whether you're Alabama or Georgia, or let's just be real, what if it's one of your only two losses? I mean, this is one of those rare occasions, Jordan, and I'm sure you agree, this is not a bad loss. Like, if you come in and you compete, whether it's Georgia or whether it's Alabama, this is not a bad loss by any means, and I don't think anybody's eliminated after Saturday.
No shot, and I think it's a situation, if we were in a four-team playoff, it still wouldn't be a knockout shot, especially this early in the year. Now, in a four-team playoff, you better go run the table elsewhere and probably beat that team in a rematch in the SEC title game, but no, I don't think by any means that this knocks either team out of it. It does shrink your margin for error, and I will say this, Georgia's got several tough games left on the slate after this, going to Texas, going to Ole Miss, hosting a Tennessee team that, Jacob, I was really impressed with what they did in Norman on Saturday. So I will say, if Georgia were the team to lose this, it's going to make your next few weeks, your next few games much more difficult because you don't have much of a margin for error. But no, I don't think whoever loses this team, they're not out of the playoff hunt by any means.
And with that, in those four games you mentioned, is it fair to say that Georgia should probably, to make the playoff in those four games, if they go 2-2, win their other games, they're probably in, would you think?
I would think so. And it'll be really interesting if that's how it plays out, to see if Georgia kind of gets a break in not having to go to the SEC title game. Now, obviously, right, it would depend on what everybody else does. And I don't think anyone wants to admit it, but, you know, I think that third team in the SEC could wind up really having the advantage, not having to play in Atlanta, playing that additional game. And if the seeding falls right, you know, potentially hosting that first round game. Obviously, you know, that will be significant wear and tear having to go that route of the playoffs. But if that were to fall that way, I'm sure, and I really do think Kirby Smart means it when he says that it means a lot to go play for the SEC title, to go try to win an SEC championship. But I know Georgia fans for sure would not be upset if that's how things ultimately played out, because I think that would set Georgia up really, really well to make a deep playoff run.
I'm willing to admit it. I've been saying it for a while. I mean, I think conference championship games, the more we get into this whole playoff scenario with more teams and those championship games meaning less and less, I mean, I fear they become irrelevant at some point, Jordan, which is a different conversation. But my follow-up to those is this. Of those four games, right, this weekend at Alabama, October 19th at Texas, November 9th at Ole Miss, and then home versus Tennessee the very next week, could you rank those for me in terms of the best opportunity for Georgia to win to the lowest opportunity for them to win? Could you rank those games in your mind?
To best, I would say Tennessee at home. I thought that Tennessee did play well, but I think they left a lot of opportunities on the table, Nico fumbling a couple times. And a couple opportunities squandered, but the defense played really well. After that, I would say the road game at Ole Miss, I still need to see Ole Miss play someone with a pulse. No offense to the likes of Georgia Southern, NTSU, some of those other teams they beat down. And then I would probably put Alabama third. I think that this Alabama team is really talented. Getting Georgia on the road is definitely beneficial, but I wouldn't be shocked if, by any means, if Georgia were able to come out of Bryant and Denny with a win. And then last, I would put Texas. I mean, I really like what Texas has done to this point. Their firepower on offense, whether it's Quinn Ewers or Arch Manning running the show, I really like what they've got to work with. So to me, the two games that I could see them dropping are this weekend against Alabama and the game at Texas. But all four are going to be very difficult. And I think, at least for a fan, you know, they want to see them win them all. But I think they're going to get their money's worth if they're going to these games, because I think these are very, very quality matchups for the Bulldogs.
He writes for Dogs247. It's Jordan Hill joining us on the phone lines. He's with us every Wednesday here on ESPN 106.7. Tell us a little bit about this Alabama team and what Georgia has said, how they're preparing, and what they should prepare for in terms of what Alabama's going to throw at them Saturday night inside of Bryant-Denny Stadium.
Well, when you look at Alabama and the way that Kirby Smart and the players have talked about it, sort of feels like it begins with Jalen Milroe, and he's the guy that had a really productive game last December when they played in the SEC title game. You go look at his numbers, they weren't off the charts, but he repeatedly made the plays he had to. He scrambled to keep drives alive, big third down conversions, and I mean, Jalen was huge in what wound up being a three-point win for Alabama. And, you know, I think you talk about offense, you also got to talk about Ryan Williams. Now, Jacob, I don't know if you know this. You know Ryan Williams is only 17 years old?
Wait, should he still be in high school?
Yeah, senior in high school. I wanted to make sure and break that on your show.
I hadn't heard that, but I appreciate you bringing the hard-hitting knowledge on this program.
That's what you get at Dogs 24/7. But, no, Ryan Williams, they understand that he is a real threat, that he has home run opportunity. And, you know, this is going to be a huge test just you know, as a mutual observer, just watching both teams, just to see how Ryan Williams handles this. This is going to be the biggest game to date in his entire life. I mean, like we said, and being serious, he should be a senior in high school right now. And I'll be really interested to watch this Alabama defense. Kirby talked like he felt like that's where the most changes from the Nick Saban regime to Kalen DeBoer have been seen and are obvious. So I want to see how that defense plays. It sounds like from what I've heard, and shout out to our guys over at Bama 24/7, they've shown themselves a little bit unreliable against the run game. And so really want to see that defensive line, if they show up and if they're able to slow down Trevor Etienne and company.
With Ryan Williams, I'm curious on if Georgia, with Kirby Smart and just the defensive minds they have on that team, do you think they have any sort of special game plan or just try to, not saying to rough him up, but maybe, I mean, just to show him a little something that maybe he hasn't seen to this point? Because we joke, but he is 17 and he is supposed to be in high school, and this is his first real big opportunity against one of the best defenses he's going to see.
For sure, and I think there's going to be a lot of physicality, and I think really the key, it's very cliche, but I always say with these big-time receivers, you know, you can't stop him, you just got to hope to contain him. And Kirby talked about that earlier in the week of, you know, let's keep a 12-yard play a 12-yard play rather than it turning into a 45-yard play. Let's tackle cleanly, and, you know, that kind of goes back to the Kentucky game. The defense did play well, but there were double-digit missed tackles, I think, according to PFF. That was one of Georgia's games with the most missed tackles in probably the last 3 or 4 years at least.
Wow.
So I mean, that's going to be the biggest thing. If you're covering Ryan Williams, if you give up a catch, you got to tackle cleanly. You got to get him to the ground because you don't want to make a bad situation worse. So I think Ryan Williams is going to get his on Saturday. But again, it's just trying to limit it as much as possible, trying to hang with him. And, you know, if you're able to get a few plays on him early, it's very easy for these young guys to get frustrated. So that would be big if Georgia is able to make a few plays early on and make Ryan Williams try to go out there and prove himself.
The biggest game of Kalen DeBoer's fresh era at Alabama. It's inside of Bryant Denny as the number two Dogs of Georgia come to town Saturday night. Jordan, are you making the trip up to Tuscaloosa, my man?
Definitely. I'll be going over, probably just driving over on Saturday. I did want to add this because I thought this was really neat, Jacob. So the last time Alabama had a new head coach, 2007, Nick Saban.
Uh-oh.
Alabama starts 3-0, and then their fourth game, a home night game against Georgia, college game day there. Wow, that sounds a lot like what we're going to see on Saturday. Now, what I'll say is Georgia's going to hope that's how this plays out and history repeats itself. Georgia won that game in overtime, and for anyone listening who might have seen that, that was the Mike Patrick, what is Brittany doing with her life? I don't know, Jacob. You might have been a little too young to hear that call, but I thought that was really interesting. A little bit of history potentially repeating itself on Saturday.
Wow. It's crazy how all that is coming full circle almost. In 2007, I was young, but I remember the game and remember the result, and it's crazy that it's been that long, really, in terms of a flash from the past. And so it's another night game inside of Tuscaloosa, Bryant Denny Stadium, and in this young football season, it's by far the biggest matchup so far. Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, who have boots on the ground in Tuscaloosa, writing for all things Georgia athletics at Dogs 247. Tell people where they can find you, all of your great coverage, and what they can expect from you guys over the weekend.
Definitely, dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. So yeah, continuing to preview this game, I would encourage folks, keep an eye out 12 p.m. Central Time on Thursday. Me and Bama 24/7's Mike Rodak are going to do a live podcast over on YouTube and our Facebook and Twitter pages previewing this big game. And obviously, it's going to get a lot of attention, got a lot of stories lined up, and super excited to continue giving everybody everything they need to know before the biggest game of the young college football season.
Well, man, we appreciate you and your time every single week. Safe travels to you and anybody else that's going with you up to Tuscaloosa. Stay safe in all this weather out there, and we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Jake.
Thanks so much. Jordan Hill, Dogs 247 on the Dogs 24/7 sports site. Go check him out there at dogs247.com. Georgia and Bama. Doesn't get bigger than that right now in college football. I'll give you some of my initial thoughts on that as we flip ahead to the next week of college football. We'll wrap up hour number one after this.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
All right, wrapping up hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We thank Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 for his time. He's always very gracious with it, and we appreciate him being with us every single Wednesday. And this Wednesday in particular, previewing Georgia and Alabama. And look, there's a lot of conversation about this game this weekend, and rightfully so. I mean, I know we here in Auburn, and as Auburn fans and Auburn people, hate to hear about these teams and about these types of games because Auburn is not a part of it. But think about how big this game is. I mean, you've got Kirby Smart in Georgia, who are coming off of a really poor performance against Kentucky 2 weeks ago, because remember, they're coming off the bye week, and they're walking into Bryant Denny Stadium. This is not in the Athens. This is in Tuscaloosa. And I think the storyline is even bigger on the opposite sideline with Kalen DeBoer. His first real test as the new head coach of Alabama. And this is not just any test. This is the number two team in the country, the Georgia Bulldogs. And so there's so much going into this. There's so much riding on this. All the storylines, all the narratives, all the things that could happen here. And man, I think we're just going to see a really good football game. I think we're going to see a really physical game. a really athletic game. And what I mean by that is just all the stinking talent that's going to be on the field between these two squads. I think Georgia's the better team. I think they're the better team, but it is on the road inside of Tuscaloosa, inside of Bryant Denny Stadium, which I've been quoted as saying, and I will say it again, I think is an overrated atmosphere. I do. There's a lot of people in there. It's a night game. They'll have their, you know, light show going on like everybody else does now. They were one of the first. They were, but I don't know. I'm not saying it's not a tough place to play. I just don't think it's top 10 in the country. But it makes it more difficult for Georgia being there rather than being in Athens, sure. And Auburn can't say anything about Athens. They haven't won there in forever. So overall, I think it's a really, really good matchup. Georgia's favored by 1.5, 2 points, depending on where you look. I mean, it's basically a toss-up. But shouldn't that tell you, or doesn't that tell you how good Georgia is for them to be favored on the road in this game? Favored in Tuscaloosa. I saw the stat earlier and I don't remember, but it's been a long time since Alabama was a home underdog. It's been a long, long time. And if Nick Saban was still coaching this team, yeah, most people probably pick Alabama. But guess what? Nick Saban's not going to be coaching. He'll be there. He'll be there on the set. He'll be in his box and he'll be watching like all the rest of us. But how does that change how this game will play out on Saturday? I don't know. We're going to have to wait and find out. Coming up in hour number two, more college football conversations and Daryl Daprich. Double D Wednesdays. That's all coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. If you missed any of hour number one, you can go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We just take the show, post the audio for you on our website. So if you ever miss any of a live show or an interview or anything like that, you can go and listen to that whenever you would like. So you can check that out at ESPNAU.com. That's also where our SEC football challenge is going to be. So be sure, or it is. It's not going to be. It is there. So you can go and check that out and make sure you get your picks in every single week. We are in week five? Wow. Week five of college football. Can you believe that? So be sure to get your picks in at ESPNAU.com. Those are due Friday at midnight each and every week. There are weekly winners and then a grand prize winner at the very end of the season to whoever is the best picker. So be sure that you get your picks in every single week for that. That is brought to you by Johnny Brusco's New York Style Pizza, University Ace Hardware, and the Orthopedic Clinic. So thank you to those three wonderful sponsors for making that contest possible to you. Speaking of the Orthopedic Clinic, before we get into content, want to remind you that hour number two, each and every day here on ESPN 106.7 during On the Line, is brought to you by our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. So we appreciate them bringing you the second hour each and every day between 3 and 4 p.m. here on ESPN. Also want to let you know, as we kind of get some housekeeping things out of the way, if you have not heard already, this coming Friday, Bill and Dan are going to be on location. The Drive will be on location this Friday, September 27th, live at Bunkers in downtown Auburn, as they are on location. Thanks to Bud Light, the guys will be live on ESPN 106.7 right here, and they'll be live on location at Bunkers, previewing the Auburn game versus Oklahoma, along with all the other big-time matches around college football. So be sure you tune in this Friday to The Drive, 4 to 6 p.m. right here on ESPN Radio, or join them on location at Bunkers in downtown Auburn for a live remote brought to you by Bud Light. So be sure that you keep that in mind. If you're out about Friday, you can go and check them out, or you can tune in here on ESPN. We've got about 10 minutes before our man Double D, Daryl Dapperidge from Locked On Auburn, joins us on the phone line. So until then, you can join me on the phone lines if you'd like to. 334-321-1390. That's the number to get you through to me. Call in, be a part of the show, be on the line, or you can just shoot me a text. 334-784-1067. You can get your thoughts in that way as well. Well, lots of conversation in the first hour, in that first 30 minutes or so, about this entire UNLV conversation. We'll get into more of that as we go. I'd love to get Daryl's thoughts on this. I know he has some thoughts on it, so definitely want to get into some more of that here today. Probably some more tomorrow and the rest of this week as well. But you know what Wednesdays are about. Wednesdays here on our show are about flipping the page and looking forward, looking to the next week, flipping the page in the college football season. And you can do that by looking at the games coming up, right? You look at all the games that are coming up this weekend in college football. Yes, you have Georgia and Alabama. Yes, you have Auburn and Oklahoma, which I want to get into in just a second. But there are other really fascinating games around the college football slate this weekend. And just in the Power 5, Power 4, whatever you want to consider it, which, have you, side note, have you seen the Pac-12? They're trying, man. They're trying to get anybody that will show up and come to their conference. I don't think they thought it would be as difficult as it is. It's like asking a date to the prom, man. They just keep swinging and missing, striking out, and they're finding anything they can get and just to show a little face. I don't know. I can't keep up with it. So once it's finalized, we'll talk about that as once it's finalized. But looking around college football this weekend, you've got games in the SEC. How about Kentucky on the road at Ole Miss? What a game that could have been. Notice how I didn't say it. What a game that's going to be. What could have been for Kentucky, a team that has fallen flat on their face. And I saw a question on social media, I think it was last night, and it said, last night or this morning, and it said, if Kentucky misses a bowl game this year in 2024, do they pull the trigger and do they fire Coach Stoops? Do they fire Mark Stoops if Kentucky misses a bowl game? And I didn't know how to answer it. I don't know. Because they're not going to beat Ole Miss this weekend. Vanderbilt's going to give them everything they want. At Florida, who knows? Auburn, who knows? At Tennessee, no. At Texas, no. And Louisville, as of right now, no. So the only wins we're going to give them to this point are Murray State, which would be 3. That's it. Murray State, which would be 3. Let's just say for fun, they beat Vanderbilt and they beat Florida. That would be 3, which would put them as a 5-win football team. I wonder what team and what game on Saturday, October 26th, comes down to Kentucky possibly making a bowl game. Oh, that's right. It's when Auburn goes to Lexington on a Saturday night. Go figure. But I think that's an interesting conversation. If Kentucky misses a bowl, do they move on from Coach Stoops and hope to find better, or will they just fall into an abyss and never be relevant again? I don't know. It's an interesting conversation. You have a top 25 matchup happening at Kansas State as they are hosting Oklahoma State. That's a Kansas State team that, if you remember, got drugged by BYU last week. They beat Arizona the week before 31-7. They turn around and almost match that in a reciprocal fashion by taking on BYU and lose 38-9. They host Oklahoma State. Reminder, that's a Sooners team, or a Cowboys team, rather, that is 3-1 after they let Utah take them down without starting quarterback Cam Rising, which I predicted, by the way. Top 25 matchup going on there. You've got other games happening around the Power 4, Power 5 levels. Another top 25 game going on this weekend. How about this on Peacock? Woohoo. Louisville is supposedly a top 15 team. That's what the AP poll is telling us. Do I believe it? I don't know. But they did win that battle with Georgia Tech last week that I told you could come down to being who gets in and who is left out of a college football playoff from the ACC, because who is it as of now? Miami? Sure. Clemson? Maybe. Other than that, there really aren't a whole lot of guarantees in the ACC. Here's the problem with Louisville, though. They took on Austin Peay and Jacksonville State. They beat them, did what they were supposed to do. Then they had a bye week before they played Georgia Tech. Now they go to Notre Dame, who is supposedly a top 20 team after losing to Northern Illinois. Don't worry, though. They bounce back with wins over Purdue and Miami of Ohio. So good for you, Fighting Irish. So that's supposed to be a top 25 game. We'll see if it ends up being that way. Arkansas, Texas A&M is this weekend, right? That's a neutral site game. They play that one at AT&T Stadium there at Jerry World in Dallas. Can Arkansas continue their streak? Can they stay hot after winning against Auburn last week, of course? And for Texas A&M, they got to figure it out. They got to figure out exactly who they are, which quarterback is going to be playing in that one. If reports Wegman could be back, I don't know, man. I don't know why you would, but good for them, I guess. Mississippi State, they'll get clobbered in Austin, taking on Texas. Ohio State, their first, can you say, challenge this weekend at Michigan State? No, it'll be a bloodbath. They're favored by almost 24 points. And other than that, it's just not a overall great week of college football. And what's unfortunate is we were hoping that outside of Bama, Georgia, that Auburn, Oklahoma was going to be the second best game this weekend in all of college football. That's not the case anymore. Not even close. Not even close. How many people at 2:30 on Saturday are going to have Auburn, Oklahoma on their TV? Let's see what other games come on that time on that day. 2:30 on Saturday, you have Wisconsin and USC. You have Louisville and Notre Dame. And you have Arkansas and Texas A&M. I would be willing to bet. I'd be willing to bet. Now, this may be flexed a little bit, talking TV numbers here, because Auburn, Oklahoma's on ABC, which everybody in the country gets, versus Arkansas, Texas A&M being on ESPN, where you have to have a cable provider, right? I'd be willing to bet that the ratings are better on Arkansas, Texas A&M than they are in Oklahoma, Auburn. What do you want to bet? I would be willing to take that. I think more people will be interested in Texas A&M and Arkansas. I think it has more, dare I say, more implications than Auburn, Oklahoma. How crazy is that idea? The fact that in terms of the SEC right now, the Arkansas-Texas A&M game has more riding on it than the Oklahoma-Auburn game. Yikes. That's not what we wanted to hear going into Week 5. That's not what we wanted to see. Never mind Auburn being 2-2, a chance to go 2-5, a chance to go 2-6, or I guess 2-2 has a chance to go 2-3, and then 2-4. That's how math works. 2-3, and then 2-4, heading into a bye week as you prepare to take on a top-10 Missouri team on the road. Not where you want to be, my friends. We'll talk to Daryl Dapprich about all that and more. Talk about Auburn and their loss to Arkansas. We'll get his quick thoughts on that, flush that away, get his thoughts on the UNLV situation, what in the world's going on in NIL and college football, and then flip the page to Auburn and Oklahoma. Daryl Dapprich from Locked on Auburn. Double D Wednesdays coming up next here on ESPN 106.7.
on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
I normally try to sing this guy in for a little bit of an intro, but the voice just ain't having it this week. But a singing intro is not even necessary because this guy just brings the energy himself. Double D, Daryl Dapperich from Locked On Auburn. His writing days, his Montgomery radio legend. I mean, his stats and his resume just continues to grow. He joins us on the phone lines right now. Daryl, how are you, my man? I hate that you're not in Atlanta, but I think you made the right call.
Yeah, I originally was supposed to be at Game 2 of the Mets-Braves series, and ironically, my brother-in-law and me always go to a game a year for his birthday, and he's a big Cubs fan, so last year we went to that series at the end of the year where the Braves and the Cubs were playing, and so this year I just said, well, you know what, this Mets-Braves series in September looks like it could be interesting and maybe have some playoff implications back in May, you know, and so we got the tickets, and sure enough, this weekend, I'm like, dude, we are set. This is going to be lit. If the Braves can win game one, it's really going to be popping over there. And then here comes what? Helene? And just comes through and this whole band of rain. But I didn't even bother to drive over there, Jacob. I was like, I'm going to get all the way over there and it's going to be canceled while I'm sitting there. So I just made the call this morning. We weren't going, and it looks like it's you know, it's going to be called. The game tomorrow is going to be called. I don't know what they're going to do as far as rescheduling. It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, well, I hate that you weren't able to get over there, but glad that you are able to be with us. And, I don't know what in the world they're going to do. We had Lindsey Crosby on yesterday, and we were talking about it, and they really don't know. I mean, this man emailed the MLB, and they didn't even know. I mean, they said, yeah, we don't want to talk about it.
He texted me this morning and said, "Dap, sit tight before you don't go, because I may get an answer." And I said, "From who?" And he said, "I emailed MLB." And I'm like, for the love of God, if they respond to him and they're like, yeah. So, yeah, I was waiting on Lindsey, baseball guru Lindsey Crosby. And he had, you know, he's as frustrated as anybody. They kind of didn't see ahead or prepared. I mean, this is huge. I mean, for all the Braves listeners that I know you have, many in that area, this is with the Braves winning last night, they have got to figure out a way. I think they got Washington coming in Friday. I'm sure they'll get that series in. But then, I don't know. You've got to work it in. You've got to work in a doubleheader because there's going to be a lot riding on it.
Yeah, doubleheader that has playoff implications on it. I mean, it's just not what you want. And yeah, I think he told us the response they gave him was, "We don't want to talk about it. We have not had discussions yet." So it's like, I mean, what? Well, what? It just doesn't. But we'd expect nothing less from MLB, right, Daryl?
Well, it could be worse. I mean, like I was telling people, you could be Rowdy Tellez, which is a sore subject with me, Pittsburgh Pirate first baseman that was four plate appearances away from a $220,000 bonus, and the cheap just joke of an owner in Pittsburgh releases him. And he does it. And, you know, I've been a fan of the Pirates, Jacob, for 50 years. I mean, they're, you know, and I am embarrassed to be affiliated with this franchise. I worked for them in the late 80s. That is such a crappy thing to do to a veteran. Look, if you don't like the way he's playing and you want to give these rookies they're calling up playing time for the last 10 days of the season, DFA him on September 1, or go ahead and DFA him, but still stroke the check for $200,000. I mean, that's a joke. It's embarrassing. And again, I know we're on a baseball tangent, but I just think that's a situation where I wish Major League Baseball would intervene like they did with Marge Schott years ago when she owned the Reds, and says, you know what, you're not fit to own a baseball team doing this kind of stuff. File a grievance and make this dude sell the team. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing. And, you know, six world titles and then the tradition of this franchise, and you do something like that. I'm embarrassed. I really am. So anyway, enough about baseball. But it is pennant fever, right? Pennant time.
Yeah.
Playoffs are going to be, you know, however it shakes out, interesting playoff matchup. So, you know, I just hope it's not the Yankees and the Dodgers and we get, you know, that series.
Me too.
Beginning
Me
of the year.
Too. I hope they make you the owner of the Pirates, Daryl.
Money, I would. I mean, it's just a joke that there are so many, you know, that little known fact, Mark Cuban tried to buy the Pirates.
Really?
Before Bob Nutting, the current owner of the Pirates, did.
Interesting.
And then he went on to the Mavericks. And so did Mario Lemieux, who, with you being a hockey guy, know that name.
Oh, yeah.
Who owned the Pittsburgh Penguins. They wanted the Penguins and the Pirates. And this joker won't sell. Why would he? He's printing money.
Yeah.
And he's so cheap that he just, you know, it's doesn't try to win. And what free agent is going to want to go to Pittsburgh in the offseason? I mean, you got Skeens there. You got some good young players. And, you know, and no one's going to want to go there with that kind of treatment.
No.
It's a joke.
No, you're absolutely right. And I hate that you have to go through that. But you've been seeing it for 50 years, my man. I mean, it's the Pirates. What do you expect?
Well,
you know?
But they were so good. Yeah, I mean, but when I became a fan, dude, in the 70s, they were on top of the world. The Lumber Company, 7 division titles in the 70s, 2 World Series. Mm. Then they had the lean years of the 80s. But they came back in the early 90s with Bonds and Bonilla and Van Slyke. But, it's been a long time since, I mean, they were in the playoffs 13, 14, and 15 of 2000. But it's hard. It's hard. And then, you know, on top of that, you've got, you know, this Auburn stuff going on. I just wonder if I should give up sports altogether. Like music or something, right?
No. Well,
right for Rolling Stone.
Well, speaking of Auburn, we're going to get to Auburn stuff coming up in just a little bit. But speaking of Pirates, there's some piratey type of stuff happening out in UNLV, my friend, out in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I know you've seen it. I know you've read into it. So we'll talk Auburn when we get back from our bottom of the hour break. But all of this stuff with UNLV, because it's taken the world by storm today, with the quarterback who has said he is using his Fred shirt. He is leaving and stepping away from the UNLV football program because he claimed there was an agreement on a certain amount of money that was going to be paid to him for playing football there. And UNLV says, yeah, we don't have any idea what you're talking about. We don't know about that. Turns out, seems to be it was an offensive coordinator that made a deal to pay this guy. And now it's he said versus he said. Daryl, your thoughts on this entire situation?
Well, I think that there's, you know, the quarterback's name's Matthew Sluka for reference. I think that there's two schools of thought here. There's this school of thought that he was promised X amount of money in NIL and UNLV has yet to pay up. And then there's the other school of thought with some people doing a little bit of research and digging. We don't know the truth, where it's no, he got paid, agreed to an amount, then they went 3-0, and the family and him started trying to renegotiate the NIL deal, which I find interesting because he's at 44% completion percentage right now. And if you look at his stats, they're terrible. Mm-hmm. I think they're 3-0 in spite of him, not because of him. That being said, what the truth is really defines the story. If that's the truth, did he try to go back in and renegotiate? Good riddance, right? If he was promised something, even by an offensive coordinator, and UNLV has not honored that, then the school – and this is exactly what – some of us predicted was going to happen. And I don't know if you're going to go into phase two of the story, if you're even aware about the running back situation now.
No, I'm not.
Okay, well, here you go. I'm breaking something on your show, brother.
Oh,
I love it.
I'm
Michael
so happy.
Allen, the fourth leading rusher on the team for UNLV, after 3 games has decided to utilize his red shirt and enter the portal at the end of the season as a redshirt junior. He said expectations for his opportunities, unfortunately, were not met, and I'm excited to continue my football career elsewhere.
Wow, the same exact language.
So, look, you've got a problem if you're Barry Odom over there because there's something happening. And I knew this is the danger of, you're not going to have guys sitting out games because you're losing or because of playing time. You're going to have dudes sitting out games and redshirting because they didn't get their NIL money. I'm telling you, they're 3-0. So you get a school, let's say, I don't know, like Missouri, Missouri may not be a good example because they probably do have a rich, but somewhere that in a Big 12 school, that's a Power 5 school, that, you know, they started out 3-0, 4-0, whatever. And they're not paying these kids, and they say, okay, that ain't right. And they're like five, six, seven dudes sit out just like you would in a labor situation. What are you going to do? I mean, we thought it was bad when people forewent and did not play in bowl games.
Bowl games, yeah.
You may have people do this in the middle of the season and say, if you don't pay me, I ain't playing next week. And, oh, by the way, we're 6-0, and this is for the conference. I mean, it's scary. And so they better – I mean, I don't know if there's a contract signed. I don't know if there's an agent negotiating this, if there's lawyers involved. But now you've got a second guy shutting it down. And you're 3-0, and you're without one of your leading rushers and your starting quarterback.
God, no, I'm literally looking it up as you speak. I'm seeing the running back who, it's funny because he used the same language as the quarterback did of, I was, you know, promised a certain, you know, guarantee or whatever, and then decided that was not met. And then what was funny about the quarterback too, he said, after further discussions, learned that was never going to be met. So now I'm leaving. I mean, what a crazy unraveling sequence of events. And at UNLV of all places, no disrespect to them, but it's a place that it's just not a Power Four major program. Think about if it does happen somewhere at Alabama or Auburn or something like that. I mean, you're talking some serious, serious trouble.
Well, I think there's – I got to be careful how I say this. I think there's certain machines and mechanism in place at places like Alabama and Georgia and Auburn that would not allow that to happen.
True.
Even if – not only would they step up and pay, I think there would be a faction that would say, this ain't happening. So, I just think it's a little – but, you know, a place like a Big 12 school where, you know, somebody was – an SMU and the ACC, a Cal or a Stanford or somewhere like, what if someone was overachieving? Like I said, 5-0, 6-0, it could happen. I think your big, big schools would honor the financial obligation and there wouldn't be an issue. Some of these group of fives or the smaller power fours, you may have a problem. And if you have a problem, they may shut it down.
Man. Well, that story is going crazy, but so is stuff here in Auburn. We'll talk about that with Daryl Dapridge after this here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He joins us every single Wednesday from 3:15-ish to 3:45-ish, and his name is Daryl Dapridge. We call him Double D here on the show, and he is with so many different outlets, got so many things going on. Daryl, tell the people everywhere you are and how they can find you.
Sure. Monday mornings at 7:10, I'm with our good friend Ben Taylor on News Talk WANI, and we do a little Double D Monday for about 20 minutes, and then Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sunday mornings on Locked on Auburn. The Sunday morning show is a reaction show to the previous night's game. I've been blessed to be able to do that now from the press box at Jordan-Hare after the game, which makes for a lot easier transition to get it recorded, and you know the field's right behind. So it's been kind of cool to record up there. And then I do some written work on The Barn, auburn.com, new community message board, put some stuff in there after the game called the DAP Recap, give a little thoughts and takeaways, you know, from what's going on. And that's when I end up bugging the heck out of you because I'm locked in typing and asking you, hey, Jacob, who made that tackle? Jacob, what are they? And you're like, dude, I'm trying to eat my little rye bread.
Okay.
And you're just,
okay.
I know. I mean, that's my bad. So you're my guy. And then, just kind of doing that. And on Mobile Station Monday morning at 8 a.m. too, WNSP, the open kickoff, I'm on that. And so just get the word out about Auburn. And I'll tell you, when it's this kind of week and there's a lot going on, it's very interesting. Yeah. Very, very interesting with all the material that you have right now covering Auburn.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Material, content, controversy, whatever word you want to use, is what has been the trend so far through the first few days of this week. And so want to get your thoughts on the game against Arkansas. And I know it's been a few days, so we'll get your quick thoughts on that as we do flip the page to Oklahoma this week. I mean, here's the bottom line, Daryl. Auburn's 2-2 with two losses to California and Arkansas inside of Jordan-Hare Stadium, and now they got to try and get ready for the best team they've seen yet. What happened last week against the Razorbacks?
Well, it's, you know, a lot of times the reason why you get beat is not very prevalent, and it's, you know, you have to dig deep and look at film and see things. I think it's very obvious, and that's the good news, is that it's not rocket science. The answer is right there in front of Auburn's players and coaching staff as to what they need to do. You just cut down on self-inflicted wounds, and it's not just turnovers. I get the amount of turnovers is just ungodly. Okay, that is bad enough as it is. But when you combine those with not being able to get off the field third down and long for a variety of reasons, third down and 19 shouldn't happen once in a game, never mind twice. And, you know, one time it was extended by a penalty. It was a foolish penalty, a hit out of bounds, roughing the passer when Auburn would have got off the field and got the ball with good field position, making Arkansas punt from inside their own 20. The other time, Keontae Scott gets lost in coverage and allows the receiver to get behind him. They give up a touchdown. So, and then you know, just inopportune penalties, not getting off the field on third and long, turning the ball over, all those things is a recipe. You will get beat. You will absolutely get beat. I don't care who you're playing. And so the good news for Auburn is if they look at that and say, look, these are correctable. These are self-inflicting. These are controllable. We can control this. If we get this cleaned up and, you know, they're moving the ball, their offensive efficiency, they're not scoring as many touchdowns as they should, but that could be because of the turnovers. But, they outgained Arkansas by more than 100 yards. They're running the ball effectively. Their guys are open in the secondary. They're scheming it upright. But still, all that doesn't matter if you can't execute. And if Auburn can clean up, I think they got a good shot Saturday. I tell you, I just have this weird feeling. My head is saying no, but my heart has this feeling that I can't. And it was the other way around against Cal and Arkansas. I intellectually kept saying Auburn's winning the game. But I did not feel great about it before kickoff. There was this edginess like, well, you know, if they screw around, they're going to get beat. And they screwed around both times by turning it over and got beat. This week, head tells me Auburn should lose. They're a 2.5-point underdog. But something in my bones is saying, I wouldn't be surprised at all. I've got a feeling Auburn's going to win the ball game Saturday.
Wouldn't that be the most Auburn thing ever? I mean, the most Auburn thing to do is lose to two mediocre teams and then beat the best one you've seen so far?
I think that, you know, Oklahoma's got a really good defense. I get that. I think they struggled against Tennessee offensively. There was no doubt. They're starting a freshman quarterback that doesn't mean anything because Auburn always gets beat by people making their first start, just the way it is. But Hawkins is a guy that you can prepare for a little bit more. It's what he does. You can focus on one particular area. You don't have to prepare for numerous things. Hawkins is dynamic. He's a dynamic athlete. He's a very good runner. I don't know how good of an accurate passer or thrower he is. Now, we thought that about Taylen Green, too. And although if you look at his numbers, he threw for 44%, and he had the one big play for 60-something yards. Otherwise, he got pulled. He threw two interceptions. But this Hawkins kid that's starting for Oklahoma is dynamic on the outside, on the edge. He can. Mm-hmm. He is a very, very difficult quarterback to hem in, but that's more one-dimensional. If Auburn's like, look, just integrity in our rush lanes, we've said this all year, you know, don't let him get outside, hedge him in, don't rush upfield and over-pursue, we'll see. Their defensive game plan, other than not being able to get off the field on third and long and doing stupid penalties, including the pass interference when the ball sailed 5 yards out of bounds late in the game and Auburn would have got it back with a chance to tie and 3 minutes to go. That was another one that killed him. So, you clean that up defensively. You just don't give up the big play, get off the field third and 10. You'll be fine. You can hold Oklahoma into the team. I really strongly believe that. Now, can Auburn, this game reminds me of the LSU game in 2016, okay. where it was the Elimination Bowl, is what they called it. And it was either Gus Malzahn or Les Miles.
Yeah.
One of them was losing their job. And Auburn and LSU went out and played a very conservative, boring, low-scoring defensive slugfest that because of Carlson, Auburn won when LSU couldn't get that playoff to end the game, even though they scored a touchdown, but time had run out.
Wasn't that Auburn's Gus only Malzahn, points was all the field goals, right?
Yep, and Gus Malzahn lived to fight another day, and what happened? Auburn goes on this wonderful run behind Petway and Sean White and, Kerryon Johnson, and was just bolt racing people until Petway pulled a hamstring at the 3-yard line against Vanderbilt going in to score, and Sean White's shoulder got mangled, and Auburn goes and plays Georgia and Athens like a double-digit favorite, and Sean White plays and can't lift his right arm, and Auburn gets beat by Alabama, but still plays Oklahoma in the Sugar Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
And gets beat. So this is a watershed. I think Auburn at the time may have only had one loss. I know they lost to Clemson that year, but they were not playing very good. And this was one of those games. It was like if Auburn loses this game at home, and then Les Miles ended up losing his job after that. But I think this game has this feeling of that Auburn's going to win it. May not be pretty, maybe ugly. Maybe a bunch of field goals and a turnover or something, but I don't know. This is a game that if there's ever, and you don't want to be dramatic, but if there is a must win, it's a must win. Mm-hmm. The chatter around recruiting, Auburn does not, in my opinion, have a path to get to a bowl game if they lose this game. Mm. They can turn things around. But if you come out of this 3-2 going to Georgia, all you have to do is win 3 out of your last 7. You don't even have to have a winning record the rest of the way, and you can get to 6 wins. But if you win this game, I think you still have a good chance to even win 7. That's what's so much riding on this football game right now. And that's why I think Auburn, there will be some urgency. There will be some sharpness. And I don't know. Don't know why. Cannot put my finger on it intellectually. Just every once in a while, you got to go with your gut. And I just have a feeling that they're going to get it done Saturday.
I think it can play into the fact of what we know about Hugh Freeze, Daryl, in terms of his reputation of the smaller, lesser opponents tend to trip him and his teams up. But the better teams, he tends to have his guys ready to go. And ready to play, and a game plan that is set to beat them. Could that play into this? I think it very well could. I think well could, which may be a part of the reason you feel that way. I don't know.
I get it. I mean, Auburn played his best game of the year last year against Alabama and lost, and I get the 4th-and-31 and all that, but they played a really good football game. People forget how well Peyton Thorne played in that game, and Hunter and Austin. Peyton Thorne really put his body on the line in that game to win that game. And people need to remember that when they boo him. And I get the interceptions, but that kid against Alabama last year did not slide, did not go out of bounds. He lowered his shoulder and got 5-10 extra yards, was running the ball effectively. I just think that, they have whatever they have done this week has definitely circled the wagons and gotten things tightened up, and probably really, I think there's a sharpening and edginess to this team that'll come out Saturday that is going to get some things cleaned up. And I think that they will be a little bit more maybe simplified on offense as far as maybe reducing the route tree a little bit so that quarterbacks don't have the wrong reads or don't have 3 or 4 options and kind of go with the wrong one. And I think you'll see them, even if Oklahoma loads the box, I think you're going to see Auburn run the ball Saturday. And, they went for 203 yards against Arkansas, who was selling out to stop the run, was walking up people in the line of scrimmage with that RPO. And if Auburn would have continued to run the ball, would have eliminated the turnovers for sure. And probably scored some more points. I mean, at the end of the day, 5 turnovers, three, what the killer is, what they got to eliminate Saturday. If you have five turnovers, three of the five can't take points off the board. Austin going in at the three for a touchdown when he fumbled, and Hank Brown throwing two picks in the red zone. You got to think with Towns Magoo, at least, at the very least, conservatively, you're going to get two field goals out of that. Well, as me and you were talking right here, add 13 points to Auburn's score Saturday and tell me how that affects the outcome.
Exactly. Exactly. Daryl Dappert's joining us on the phone lines from Locked On Auburn. I have a question here as we wrap up, Daryl. And I know how it plays out is a huge factor here. It's my favorite game. It's the what if. And I know how it plays out and how it happens is a big, big factor in this. But just in a vacuum, plain and simple, what do we learn and what does it mean if Auburn wins this football game Saturday and if they lose this game Saturday? How do we feel coming out of it? Again, take out how it happens, but just in a vacuum, how do we feel? What do we learn? What do we know if Auburn wins and if Auburn loses?
If Auburn wins, I think part of their season is salvaged. I think there's still some goals left on the table to achieve if they win. If they lose, you're looking at potentially a five-win season, and some things you could start seeing some cracks in the mortar. You could start seeing some recruits. I hope this isn't the case, but you know, negative recruiting. Auburn can't win. Hugh Freeze can't develop quarterbacks. People are getting disgruntled, and then the next thing you know, you lose all that recruiting momentum, and you're struggling to get to five wins, and that becomes a regression from the previous season, which would be the narrative all offseason. So that's what we learned. That's what's at stake, in my opinion. I mean, even if Auburn looks great Saturday, to go to your point, and they lose, I don't care. They need to look horrible and win. They need a W, and they need to get to 3-2 coming out of this homestand and just focus on, okay, we've got a little confidence now. We know we can win if we don't beat ourselves. See, that's the narrative that'll come out of this that will carry them into practice and carry them into Georgia the following week is, oh, well, if we just take care of the football and get off the field on third down and don't commit stupid penalties, we're fine. We just beat the number 16 team in the country. With that will breed confidence. You lose the game, and I'm afraid you go in the other direction, and there's self-doubt that seeps in. There's dissension that could seep in. Look, it's just human nature. And I just think it's one of those reasons why when you lose a couple at home that you should win, you've got to go out and find a couple that you should have lost and get and win. You got to go out and get one that you weren't supposed to get. And to do that, Auburn has to win starting with Saturday.
Daryl Dappert, he joins me every Wednesday, 3:15 to 3:45. We always appreciate him and his time. He's a busy man, and we know that. And Daryl, before I let you go, it's sad that we're having to mention this in September, but Auburn basketball started today, my friend.
I saw something real quick that Bruce Pearl said for Auburn, the Auburn basketball Twitter. I'm going to still say Twitter site, because if I say Auburn basketball X site, something about sounds weird. But the Twitter site for Auburn basketball, he just gave a quick little snippet, and he said, I've never gone into a season with so much roster uncertainty as far as positions, but that's a good thing. And he explained how Denver Jones, who is an off-ball guard, is going to be counted on to be the point guard, and Taj Petford, who he thought was only going to be off the ball, is going to have the ball in his hands more now because he can run the point. And he talked about Broom playing forward, not just center.
Hey-o.
And he said, I got multitude of guys that can play the two and can play the three. And he was just like, this is just the flexibility of this roster is off the charts. And what that tells me, Jacob, is it will whoever your opponent is, you can adjust and adapt to what you do as far as personnel and where they play. You can go big, you can go small, you can go experience at the point, you can go dynamic at the point with explosive ball control. You can put Chad Baker on a wing. You can put Miles Kelly on a wing. Mm. I think the versatility there is going to be big, and it's going to be very, very, very hard to defend.
Man, that's music to my ears, my friend. Oh, my goodness. Auburn basketball cannot get here soon enough. Practice started today. So more updates throughout as we go and get closer to basketball season. Daryl, we appreciate your time, my friend. Your fellowship is always appreciated, and you're a fan favorite around here. We appreciate you, and I'll see you this weekend.
All right, brother. Have a great week. Rest of your week. Take care.
Thanks so much. Daryl Dappert's Double D joins us every Wednesday right here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Back after this to wrap it all up on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you all being with me all show long for the last couple of hours. And look, I know it is a nasty day outside. Looks to be lightening up a little bit here in the Auburn Opelika area. But appreciate you all being with us for the last couple of hours. Been a great show. I had Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 was with us earlier today in the show, previewing Georgia and Alabama. Big, big matchup this weekend. So we had Jordan Hill from Dogs 247 with us, and then just got off the phone with Daryl Dappert talking all things Auburn football, a little Auburn basketball there at the end as well. So if you missed those two guests or our conversations about UNLV, which is the topic of the day so far, the fact that their starting quarterback has decided to redshirt and step away from the program due to NIL complications, and now, as Daryl reported on our show, more informed me about it. I got a couple of texts as well. But supposedly, and I guess this is a fact, their running back has decided to redshirt and step away and leave the program due to NIL complications. We had a lot of talk for topics and conversations about that on the show today as well. So all of that can be found on the show as a podcast. You can find that on our station website at ESPNAU.com. We'll post that for you a few minutes after today's show. And I got a text about that current situation. One last text before we get out of here. It says, I feel like the NIL deals are teaching these kids to quit. Like Saban said, everyone wants money. They don't want to get better. I feel like the quarterback should have to finish the season. Instead, he chose to walk out on his teammates, who he shared blood, sweat, and tears with. What a shame college football has come to. And look, it's a very tough subject. It is. It's a tough topic of conversation because in terms of money, we've never had this conversation before, but Daryl alluded to it where this is the same type of conversation that we had in turn or have been having when kids would opt out of bowl games. And you saw how passionate and fired up people and fans got about that. But as Double D said, man, what happens when you have a team that's 6-0, 7-0, 10-0, and it turns out they're not going to get their NIL money? And they decide to sit out, or they just simply demand more money. They just simply say, yeah, we're having a pretty good season, which seems to be what's happening in UNLV. And they say, you want me to play in the college football playoff? Yeah, I'm going to need another $100,000, or I'm not going to play. Can you imagine? You don't think that's coming? Then you're wrong. It's happening right in front of our eyes. And so, do I think the quarterback and the running back are in the right to leave their team? No. But I do think they're in the right to protect themselves and look out for themselves because it's all about the money and the programs and the schools. They don't care about the individual. They care about the money they bring in. So why is it so bad when the individual does it against the bigger party? Lots more on that tomorrow and Friday. Both shows will have a show tomorrow, a show on Friday as well. We'll talk more Auburn, Oklahoma. Who knows what else we're going to have. Tomorrow's a busy guest day as well, so you don't want to miss it. 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe in the weather. I'll talk to you later.